from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum. Have you ever noticed how many yoga studios there seem to be in the Bay Area? And it's not just a California phenomenon. Nearly 16 million Americans practice yoga, and they spend almost $6 billion a year on classes, equipment, and yoga products. This weekend, nearly 2,000 people will be attending the annual Yoga Journal Conference in San Francisco. So, what's behind the resurgence in popularity of this 4,000-year-old practice? Ahead on Forum, we'll talk with two San Francisco yoga teachers and the yoga conference director. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome to Forum. San Francisco is a convention town. In the coming weeks, it's playing host to groups as diverse as an earthquake engineering organization, the Hematology Society, and something called the International Bear Rendezvous, which promises 800 attendees of indeterminate orientation. But none of those conferences will be as well attended as the annual yoga conference sponsored by Yoga Journal, which welcomes some 2,000 participants this weekend. Yoga is immensely popular. Nearly 16 million Americans practice it. And it's not just in affluent corners of American society either. Its potential health benefits are currently being studied in prisons, charter schools, and cancer wards. And in this hour forum, we want to find out what's behind the explosion of interest in yoga. Joining us, Alana Magal. She is the conference director for Yoga Journal, running the conference this weekend. That conference got underway yesterday and continues through Monday at the Hyatt Regency Embarcadero in San Francisco. Alana Magal, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Happy to have you here. Joining us as well, two San Francisco-based yoga instructors who are also leading workshops at the conference. James Higgins, senior instructor with Yoga Works in San Francisco, and Marin. James, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
Happy to have you join us, as does Stephanie Snyder, who teaches locally at Yoga Tree in San Francisco. Stephanie, good morning.
Hi, Dave.
Pleasure to have all of you here to talk about this engaging practice that has become so incredibly popular. I mentioned nearly 16 million Americans practice it. Nearly $6 billion is spent each year in the United States on yoga instruction, yoga products, yoga equipment, all that kind of thing. So, James, talk about why that happens. What is its appeal that seems to cut now pretty broadly across American society?
Well, I think that really so many people are seeing the benefits that the people that are doing it that are having. They see sort of that glow or that happiness or that just that sense of ease that's just, you know, what everybody wants. Everyone wants to have some sense of happiness or some sense of freedom, and yoga provides that. And the proof, so to speak, is in the pudding, and people are really getting turned on to something that's holistically helping them in the body, in the mind, in their emotional field. Across the whole spectrum of wellness, yoga hits on all those vital points of health, we could say, just health.
You know, it's interesting in your response, you didn't say the word yoga position or posture. And of course, when you imagine yoga, you think about those particular positions and postures that people take. But is that then only the means to a different end?
Well, the postures are really the attractive point for most people, because I think as an American culture, we look at the body first, and most of us get into yoga because of the body. And that's sort of the first entry into this massive philosophy, which is yoga. And through the body, you start experiencing those benefits and you start sensitizing yourself. The postures are designed to sensitize yourself to something else, and this is what yoga is. This is this larger aspect of reality, which we all share. It's universal, and individually we use the postures to connect to that bigger universal truth, which provides the peace, you know?
Yeah. James Higgins teaches at Yoga Works in Marin in San Francisco, participating in the Yoga convention taking place, sponsored by Yoga Journal magazine this weekend. Stephanie Snyder, how about for you? Because you came to this out of some health concerns, a path that you traveled.
That's one way to put it.
Tell us something about that story and what yoga provided for you.
Okay. Well, for me, I was sort of living a life of, we'll call it debauchery. And that included a lot of partying and really substance abuse for me. And along with that, it sort of looked like fun on the outside, but along with that was some depression and anxiety. And I really wasn't happy. And I remember just thinking, you know, there must be something else. You know, there must be something else. And I was really headed towards this path of sort of self-destruction, really. And I remember I went to a yoga class and sort of just fell into it. And during Shavasana, I thought it was hard physically, you know, which was cool because it was a workout. I was fine with that. But then we did Shavasana, which is the final pose, which you'll end every yoga class in, which is where you lay down and close your eyes. And usually for me, laying down and closing my eyes was like, you know, the tape starts playing in my brain and all the sort of neurotic thoughts that we all have. And I had a moment during Shavasana in that yoga class that was quiet, that was calm. And I specifically remember thinking, that must be what peace is. Like, this must be what peace is. And in that moment, I knew there was something for me in the practice. And I was hooked from then on. And it really did change my entire life, the practice of yoga. So, you know, I owe my wonderful life to the practice of yoga. And I see that happen for lots of people, you know, to different degrees.
Do you think that we are now beyond, or do you think still people think of yoga as the sort of woo-woo California practice?
Right. I think it's all things, you know, and I think that that's why it's great. There are so many yoga teachers out there. There's a teacher for every student out there. And you can come to it for, you know, I always tell my students, if you come to my class to get a better butt or, you know, stronger shoulders, that's fine. I'm happy to have you, you know, because I know that they're going to get all of the benefits of the practice. And I've seen it time and time again, you know, where I'll have like a hardcore sort of punk rocker student who comes to me and says, you know, I think I'm going to try to quit smoking. You know, I think I might stop eating meat. I think. And so the thing is, there's a lot of, yeah, there's the hippy dippy side to it for sure. And that's great if that's what you're into. But also you can come to yoga just for the workout and you will get all of the benefits of the practice. They will unfold.
So is there in yoga now a sort of big tent philosophy, Alana Magal, that you can do this in a variety of ways, that you don't have to necessarily be, you know, as pure as the classic Indian yogi?
Absolutely. You know, yoga is for everybody in all shapes, all sizes, all from all walks of life. We you know, everybody is doing it now and should be doing it if they're not. It really is for everyone. We see it at the conferences. We feature it in the magazines. It's great for weight loss, but it's also great for spiritual awakening. I mean, myself, I'm a mom. I have two children, and I find that my practice just makes me a better mother.
How so?
I go to my practice when things get stressful. You know, I have two small kids. I work full time, so I have a very, very busy life. And I try to go to my practice when I might want to lose it with my kids. It really helps me ground myself. And I honestly don't know with my life where I would be without my yoga practice.
Is that ever a challenge for any of you, though, to sort of practice what you preach? I mean, to have this belief, but you get so wired up in just running your own practice and keeping track of your clients and running a business and taking care of the accounting and all the rest that you wind up being sort of the anti-yoga.
Yes, it is a challenge, you know, but that's part of life. That's what makes it a practice. You keep coming back to it again and again and again. And for me, you know, it's like the proof, like James was saying, is in the pudding. There's evidence in my life that yoga makes my life happier, that gives me a happier existence. It reduces suffering. So for me, the teachings of yoga are a refuge. You know, whenever things get too hectic or stressful or whatever it is, I refer to the teachings of yoga or I go to my asana practice and I take refuge there. And there's always sort of a solution for me in that. And so it's kind of like drinking water when you're thirsty. You're thirsty, so you drink the water. It sort of becomes an instinct.
Stephanie Snyder. James, you want to add?
And it's like the further you go down the path, the less tolerance you have for stress. Like, in other words, the priority is your well-being, your health, and yourself. And when you start getting a little bit out of whack or a little bit out of alignment or a little bit out of ease, the refuge, as Stephanie said, is the practice. And it just keeps producing endless benefits, endless benefits.
Well, let's talk about that and what the evidence is for those benefits, because there are probably at least some people, even here in the Bay Area, listening to this program who are saying, come on, how do you know that? And when I was reading as background preparation for this show, you see articles about yoga being evidenced as beneficial for everything from dealing with cancer patients to heart disease to stress to the kids in troubled schools that you work with, Stephanie, to prisoners at San Quentin. And on the one hand, it's incredibly impressive. And on the other hand, you wonder, Alana, whether or not you know that. I mean, how do you know that it's making a difference?
I think, as what James said, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We've seen it time and time again. We've seen cancer patients that have gone into remission from their yoga practice. We've seen the benefits in prisons of just calming the prisoners down and making them feel more at peace with where they are. It's just time and time again, it's been proven that yoga is really a wonderful stress reliever, and it calms the mind. And it's just, That's one of the things that I think has been evidenced.
There's a new study out from Ohio State University, among others. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this one in particular, that talks about the reduction in inflammation, and that is something that can also lessen the risk of heart disease. And it seems like increasingly there's real interest in the medical community in assessing the concrete scientific medicinal benefits of something like yoga. Is that what you're seeing as well? Do you have doctors who come to you? Do you have doctors refer people to your classes?
I don't actually have anyone refer them, but I have many doctors in my classes, and that's why they're there. You know, the benefits speak for themselves. And something I just kind of wanted to articulate is it's the experience that keeps bringing people back. You know, a lot of what you're saying, people ask the questions, and then if they have the experience, then they'll know the benefits. So it's actually, you know, finding a good teacher, taking a good class, and then the experience will be the thing that carries them forward into their wellness.
Stephanie Snyder, describe the work that you do with KIPP Academy, which runs a couple of charter schools in the Bay Area, particularly for kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, because this work is actually being assessed by researchers at Stanford University.
Yeah, this program, it's a pilot program. It's being studied by Stanford University right now, and we're working with a population of kids that are considered at-risk youth. It's a charter school. And what we're trying to do, it's called Headstand, actually, the program. It's headstand.org. And what we're trying to do is integrate yoga into the curriculum. So, you know, they have math class, they have English class, they have yoga. I mean, it's part of their day and it's built into their day. And the results have been amazing. I mean, heartbreakingly beautiful, actually, when you see these kids who come from home lives that are very chaotic. They have a history of trauma, and they can come to yoga, and it does increase their ability to concentrate. It increases self-esteem. You know, they get to do poses and learn things and succeed. Mm. But the most important thing for us as yogis to transmit to these students is that they have an inner resource. So regardless of what their external life looks like, they have that inner resource that they can tap into. And hopefully when they get to trust that, they can make better decisions for themselves, which will change their lives.
Tell me a story about someone you've worked with and the way in which you've seen that change begin to evolve.
Well, there are a lot of stories. And Catherine Puir is actually the founder of Headstand, and she's the one in the schools teaching them every single day. And there are a lot of stories. One, I just actually read a quote that she sent me yesterday that said, you know, she was asking her students, how does yoga help you? And her students said, you know, I come to yoga, or what does yoga mean to you? I come to yoga because it really helps me. The second sentence was, and it's really hard for me to get help.
Hmm.
Another.
And is the key there that she's finding help inside her?
Yes. Yeah. You know, another student came to her during a break period and said, can I come in and do yoga? Because she found out that someone who had harmed her in the past had been released from prison. This is a child. And that person was out in the world. And she wanted to come and do yoga during her break because she knew it would calm her down. Hmm.
Stephanie Snyder, one of the participants who are taking part in this week's Yoga Journal Conference, which started yesterday, continues through February 1st at the Hyatt Regency in Embarcadero. Lana McGall, who directs the conference, if people are still interested in joining in on conference activities, is that still possible to
do? Absolutely. There are a lot of ways for people to get involved. One is to check out our website and find out the classes that you want to go to. And our website is yjevents.com. It is available for everyone. We have classes that are free and open to the public, and those will be going on tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 2. It is on a space available basis, but we'd love to see everybody come down to that. We also have evening classes tonight that there's still space available in. Some wonderful teachers teaching tonight. Stephanie is one of them. we have tomorrow evening, we have a trance dance and kirtan event, which still has space available. There's a lot of free events going on. And then, of course, we have the conference weekend, which we still have some single class passes available and some day passes available. You can go down to the Hyatt on site. We also have a fabulous yoga marketplace, which has 65 vendors with everything from DVDs to clothing to jewelry to T-shirts. Yoga Journal actually has a T-shirt that we're selling, and $3 from every T-shirt will go to the relief effort in Haiti. Our vendors tomorrow and Sunday from 5:30 to 6:30 are going to be donating a portion of their proceeds to Partners in Health, which is working on the ground in Haiti.
And again, the website, if you want to find out more, it's yjevents.org or .com. yjevents.com if you're interested in participating in this weekend's Yoga Journal Conference taking place at the Hyatt Regency Hotel, the Embarcadero, down on the shoreline of San Francisco. There are controversies in yoga, and let's talk about some of them and whether and how you contend with that. I'm curious about how you contend with it at a conference like this. I was reading an article the other day about yoga competitions. It was an article in the New York Times. And in some ways, it seems sort of antithetical to what yoga is about, that you would have competitions, or some people who even think it should be an Olympic sport. What's your view on that? Is there room for that within the kind of practice that you have all been describing? No one wants to answer. I see you. Everyone in the room is looking at the wall.
Well, I honestly think there's room for that, of course, because that's what they're doing. That's what turns them on. That's what they're into. As a traditional practitioner, that's not what I'm interested in. And, people need to express themselves, and maybe that makes them happy. You know, as far as I'm concerned, good for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's room for all of it. It's all good. You know, I haven't participated in anything like that myself either. However, you know, if that means that somebody sees a picture of someone doing a crazy yoga pose because it was in the paper and they think, oh, maybe I'll try yoga. You know, the more people that try yoga, the better for all of us. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. It's all good. We're not really here to judge anybody. So,
and if not competition, do you see there's also been a growth in yoga festivals? There's an article in your journal about that recently. Do you see that sort of communal gathering, be it
awesome,
competitive or not, mm-hmm, of being real value?
Sure. I mean, look, there are less healthy ways to spend your time, to spend your weekend. So if you're going to spend a whole weekend doing yoga with a bunch of other yogis, I think that's great.
Yoga is our topic this hour on Forum, and we're going to open up our phone lines a little bit early. If you have an interest in this topic, if you have particular questions about its benefits or practice, go ahead and open up our phone lines and take some of your calls before we get to our break in just a few moments. Here's the number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Another thing that I read recently, this week actually, another New York Times article had to do with food and yoga and the sort of tension, I guess, between purists and not about the relationship of food and yoga. And it basically came down to whether or not you could eat bacon and be a yogi. I mean, in essence, that's what it came down to. How do you view that particular debate?
Wow. Well, for me, I can only speak from my experience. There was a long period of time where I did eat meat and stuff like that. And then as I deepened my practice, I became a vegetarian. And people evolve and they make their own choices. And I'm sure people are going to be more and more tuned into their bodies and what's good for it and what's not. And, you know, I think diet really comes down to an individual's preference. And as long as that makes them happy and healthy, they make the choice.
Do you have the same view about that as you do competition, Stephanie Snyder, that if you want to combine yoga with having a great meal, that's fine?
Well, it's a hot topic, the yoga diet, for sure. And my personal opinion is I'm a vegetarian, and that's partly because part of the philosophy of yoga is ahimsa and non-violence, practice of compassion. So for me, that's part of how I practice compassion is not to eat meat or animals. But, you know, I also want to say that it's not my place to impose that on anyone else. And if I alienate you by being dogmatic about that belief, I can't serve you. So as as a yoga teacher. So I think that it is a personal decision that people need to come to on their own.
And do you talk about these kinds of topics at the conference? I mean, is this a place where you can sort of air out to eat bacon or not to eat bacon?
Yeah. I mean, at this particular conference, we don't have a panel on the subject, but this has been the Ahimsa panel has been at some other conferences. And many of our yoga teachers are vegetarian, but not all of them. And it's definitely a very heated topic.
Let's hear from our listeners. We'll sneak in at least one call before our break. Lines are busy. And Rashmi in Cupertino has a first quick question, if you would, please. Rashmi.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. My question is, I'm in Cupertino, and I've been trying yoga for some time with different instructors, but I just would like to know what is the best way to know the instructor knows what she or he is teaching, and I would like to get best out of the instructor and get the authentic yoga asanas learned from the instructor.
It's a great question that must come up all the time about how you find the right instructor.
I always tell people that you really have to try different instructors, and people always ask me, what class should I take at the conference? And I say, well, it's really what is going to resonate with you, because if I recommend something, it's what resonates with me. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to resonate with you. And it's really about finding your own practice. You have to yoga shop a little bit.
So is it a bit like anything else,
Finding
a lawyer that you like or a financial planner or whatever it happens to be? You have to look around and find what works for you?
I mean, I think so. I mean, that's what I've done. I mean, I'm very fortunate because I get to take classes with some of the most amazing teachers at every conference. But there are so many yoga teachers in the Bay Area, and there are so many different styles of yoga. There's everything from the Iyengar, which is very slow and focuses really on postures, to the vinyasa flow in a power yoga in a heated room where it's a major workout. So, and everything in between. So I think people really have to know what they're going in for, and they really have to find what resonates with them. And they just have to shop around until they find what works for them.
Lana Magal, she directs the conference that's going on this weekend, sponsored by Yoga Journal. If you want to find out more, you can go to yfevents.com and learn about that. When we come back, we'll take your calls. Here's the number if you want to join in our conversation. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And you can also go to our website and post your comments there. That's kqed.org/forum, and click on this particular segment. Back with more in just a moment. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour is yoga, the growth in its popularity across the United States, particularly perhaps here in California, which is the site here in San Francisco of this weekend's annual Yoga Journal Conference taking place at the Hyatt Regency Embarcadero. Goes on through Monday, February the 1st. If you're interested in learning more about it, again, the website yfevents.com. YJEvents.com. And Mark, you're on the air with our first question. Mark, go ahead, please.
Yes, it's a great topic, and it's really personal to me how yoga has really changed throughout the decades. My mother was a yoga instructor for over 20 years, She studied with a man in India, and then she taught it through the 60s, 70s, but retired in the early 80s. But back then, it was very marginalized. She taught at health spas, and you had to, like, walk through the bodybuilders, the chrome barbells, to get to the yoga room in the back. And she taught at community colleges and then the YMCA. But growing up, I only remember her on a yoga mat with a leotard with both of her legs behind her back and lifting herself off the ground with her hands.
Cool mom.
So, yeah, thanks.
Thanks for the
history, Mark. Appreciate that and your comments on that. A couple of emails coming in. One person writes, yoga is for everyone. I want to stress that yoga is really for everybody. I teach a gentle yoga class, and many of my students are older, recovering from injury or surgery. Sometimes they come to class just to breathe and do some gentle stretches, meaning they are not doing power yoga, but they are getting still amazing benefits. Joyce has a question sort of along those same lines in San Jose. Joyce, go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. As I said to the young man who answered the phone, can't see me on the radio, but you'd know me if rolled up to you. And as I'm mobility challenged and I walk funny, but that doesn't mean I can't do what I do, which is I do yoga. Young lady who said, could she come in on her break? I do yoga everywhere I am, when I'm riding on the light rail. Oh, that pole isn't going to drop. If it were my weight.
Joyce, sorry, we're losing you a bit on your connection, but I appreciate your point of view. And your point, really, Stephanie, is that you can do this kind of anywhere and really no matter what physical condition or physical challenges you might face.
Absolutely. Yoga is absolutely for everyone. If you go to a class that doesn't work for you, go to another class and another class until you find one that does. And I think what Joan was saying, too, is you know, practicing yoga on the light rail or something like that. You know, yoga is a lifestyle. It's a way of life. And so, you know, just by having a happy gaze on your face when you're in line at the DMV, that's you really doing real
yoga.
Maybe
it's the people who work at the DMV.
Yeah, or being nice to those people, right? You know, when you're in line or not honking at someone if they take your parking spot. That's also, you know, that's what the real practicing yoga off your mat.
Peter writes in from San Anselmo, when I was a medical resident at a major university, I developed back pain due to all the running around we had to do. Of course, I was afraid that it was some crippling spine disease. A new wonder drug called ibuprofen had come out. It worked temporarily, but then I discovered yoga, and within a few weeks, the pain was totally gone without drugs. I wondered why I was not learning about this technique as part of my high-powered medical education. Do you have a sense of yoga being incorporated more into medical training and whether or not there is an openness to that possibility?
Well, just something that I know is that I think at UCSF, a friend of mine who's a teacher said that one of the most popular classes there is for all the students of in the medical field. So there's obviously a big place for that because that's such a stressful road to take through school. And I know that they need some reprieve from that. And yoga is a very popular thing for that.
Hima in Cupertino has our next question. Hima, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to share my experience with yoga. I've been doing yoga for 2 or 3 years. And what I really found is after 3 years, I'm getting the real effect of yoga. So all those people who are just starting off, just be patient. You'll get more out of your yoga as the years roll by.
Thanks for the observation. Right. Do you find that people come and think, you know, I want this, I want that, and then are disappointed that 45 minutes later it hasn't happened?
No, I don't think so. I think that they get what they want to get that day. And I think that they're, in my experience, new students are surprised at how much they get out of it. Hmm. Yeah, they're actually weren't looking for so much and are happily pleased.
I'm interested in how you're trying to reach out. You talked earlier, Stephanie, about the work that you do at KIPP Academy, a school for disadvantaged kids. But it's still true, if you look at the demographics for yoga, that 72% are women. So according to the survey that your magazine sponsored, Alana, so you still have some work to do to reach men. But also interestingly to me, 71% in your survey were college educated, 27% of whom had advanced graduate degrees. So is it a challenge to some degree still to have this be something that isn't just viewed as for the elites?
I think that it's starting to reach all populations now, and certainly in the work that people like Stephanie are doing, and all over the country. One of the reasons we actually offer so many of our free classes is exactly that, because we want to make it open and available to anybody and everybody. And if they can't necessarily afford to pay the money for the conference, well, here it is. Here's your entree in. And there are a lot of donation-based classes popping up all over the city. And so I think that there is that perception, but I think the more we start going into the underserved populations, it's starting to show up in that way, that it's not just for the elite.
And what about reaching more men, Stephanie? If one article I read talked about how men tend to want something that's more competitive, they want to sweat, they want to beat the other guy on one-on-one basketball, whatever it happens to be, and that yoga seems to not quite present that same sort of challenge.
Mm-hmm. I have lots of guys in my class, and the style of yoga that I teach is vinyasa, so it is a little bit more athletic and physically demanding. I think that is attractive to men, and it's bringing men in more, and I really do see the wave coming. You know, I see that men are doing more and more yoga. I see more and more men in my classes, and it's just a matter of time.
Back to our calls. Let's hear next from Chris in San Francisco. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm a project manager by profession. I have, like any other art and any other science, we have certification for everything. I'm quite surprised why yoga doesn't have a certification, so that instead of I going and doing a yoga shopping, I know who is a real certified professional and I can go directly to him.
Chris, thanks. It's a really interesting question. We were actually talking, Chris, during the break at the half hour mark about a controversy going on now in the state of Virginia, where they're trying to have state regulation and yoga instructors pushing back on that. Now, there's a difference, we should add, right, between certification and state regulation, because if someone goes through yoga training at a place like Yoga Works or elsewhere, you get a certificate. Mm-hmm. So describe that and how the profession sees that, and the need for perhaps more certification or more regulation.
Well, there's the Yoga Alliance, which certifies teachers. And, you know, that's a good idea just in terms of there's some way to measure, you know, this person has had a certain amount of anatomy, a certain amount of philosophy training. And so there's that kind of certification that most studios now, you need to have that 200-hour certification to get hired.
And is this like what you were saying before, Alana, about just doing some shopping around, that if Chris wants to find someone who's gone through a certain amount of training, that you need to ask those questions?
Exactly. And you know, there are some teacher training programs out there that may not be quite as reputable because a lot of schools are just offering teacher training programs, and some teachers can get certified in a weekend, which doesn't necessarily make a yoga teacher. So absolutely, people really need to do their homework and their research, and because there are a lot of injuries happening out there now. And you go to classes with teachers that think they're suddenly a yoga teacher after a weekend, and you can't really learn anything in a weekend.
Do you favor or oppose, James, more regulation in that regard? Do you think there should the state be stepping in and saying, you know, if you're going to go to James Higgins for a class, he needs to present you with this level of credentials?
Well, I think there's a place for it, but I kind of regulation sometimes. I just, you know, I don't know about people imposing their wills on it. I think amongst the community, you can always find good teachers from word of mouth or people that know in the community. You'll always find the right place. That being said, I mean, a basic 200 hours is what every basic teacher should have. And then, you know, they can go to the next level. They add 300 more hours, then they have 500 hours.
And there's nothing wrong with consumers asking that question.
Not
right?
At all.
And approaching it with that sort of assertiveness.
Yeah, I understand. Absolutely.
Mona writes in, many people interested in yoga might find themselves barred from the opportunity to practice in a class setting due to price barriers. The choice often comes down to either dishing up to $14 per class or alternatively cramming themselves into a community class at the beginner level. Does becoming serious about this always mean making a serious monetary investment? Alana McGall.
I mean, there are, like I said, there are donation-based classes, but there are also, you don't have to go to a class to practice. There are DVDs. Actually, Stephanie is in the Yoga Journal DVD that just recently came out. There are a lot of great DVDs out there. There's a beginner's DVD with Jason Crandall that Yoga Journal also just put out, and it gives you step-by-step information on how to do your practice. So you don't need to necessarily go to a class, and you don't need to have a lot of money. A DVD is $9.99 or $14.99, and that's one way to do it. We also have podcasts on our website that are free and downloadable at yogajournal.com. So there are a lot of opportunities without having to spend money to learn about yoga.
And do any larger groups, whether it's Yoga Works that you work with, James, or Yoga Tree that you do, Stephanie, that offer classes on any kind of sliding scale? Are there opportunities for lower-income people to take yoga classes?
Yoga Tree has a community class, which I think is $7. And the other thing I want to say is that, you know, you can go to one class a week with a teacher to get that guidance, but then really it's important to cultivate your home practice and to practice at home every day. And that's something I really stress to my students. Come to the teacher for your check-in and then really cultivate your own practice.
Here's someone who writes in a related question. Patty writes in, I'm concerned about the bigger yoga companies taking over the smaller studios. Can you comment on that? When I enter a place like Yoga Works, it feels like a meat market. James?
Yeah, that's been something kind of new here because Yoga Works is definitely a corporation. And for many years, there was sort of, a community feel amongst these studios. And now there's sort of a bigger fish involved. Yeah. And there's benefits to that. And then there's also challenges, definitely.
Well, let me read the rest of her comment because this speaks to something that perhaps you can comment on, again, about finding your way in this practice and how to get what you need. She went on to say, I went to Yoga Works and tried a beginner class. It was so over my head. I felt like the teacher was sort of annoyed with me. And goes on to talk about the problem of finding what fits for this person. What would you say to her, Stephanie?
I'm sad for her. I'm sorry that she had that experience. And like I said before, you know, finding a teacher is like making a friend. I mean, you meet 10 people in your day and there might be one or two that you really connect with and want to, you know, spend more time with. Your yoga teacher is the same. You know, you need to take a few classes before, you might take 5 or 10 classes before you find that person that you really connect with. And it's just a matter of finding the person that speaks a language that you can understand. And it's just like, you know, the same way that you make friends.
Yeah. Stephanie Snyder joins us this hour. She teaches yoga here in the Bay Area, participates in this weekend's conference sponsored by Yoga Journal magazine. She joins us along with James Higgins and Alana McGall, who directs that conference. And let's take another call. This one comes from Leanne, who joins us from Santa Rosa this morning. Leanne, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to share my experience. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis about probably 10 years ago now. And the one thing, you know, the doctors were like, medication. And I found a nutritionist, and she kind of pushed me into yoga. I was very hesitant to do so. But I've been symptom-free for 10 years and never taken the medication.
Wonderful.
Leanne, thanks. Thanks for the call and the observation. Appreciate your offering that story to us this morning. Do you want to add to that, Stephanie?
You hear these stories all the time. All the time. And it's a testament to yoga.
Do you have to be a tad careful, though, about that? I mean, MS is a serious neurological condition.
Yeah.
There are many others as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. There are conditions, cancer, heart disease, whatever. And you hear sometimes, well, yoga takes care of it. I mean, do you ever find yourself in needing to say, you know, you need to take your pills too, or whatever, that this is not something that is necessarily going to be the be-all, cure-all?
Yes, I'm not a medical doctor. Nor do I pretend to be or want to be. But I think the point is that if you continue to practice yoga, not that you should stop taking your pills, but that like her symptoms are in remission, so she no longer needs to take the pills. And that's the story.
To Debbie in Cotati this morning. Debbie, go ahead.
Oh, good morning. My question has to do with making individual platform yoga for people like me who have a hard time getting up and down from the floor. And it seemed years and years ago I loved yoga, did it for years, and couldn't do it anymore because of joint problems. Why, and I haven't heard of anybody actually supplying that sort of platform mat situation.
Okay, thanks for the call.
An upcoming thing?
Yeah, if whoever would like to respond to that, just describe what platform means for those of us who aren't sure.
Go ahead, Debbie. Like a platform bed situation or a PT mat at a physical therapy office, that sort of thing, not the outdoor platform that's beautiful hanging off a cliff, you know.
Okay, Debbie, thanks. Thoughts on how to assist someone who has that sort of joint pain issue and how to be able to continue her yoga practice?
There are some teachers in the Bay Area. I know someone named Ann Salyu, who's a back hair specialist. There are certain teachers who specialize in certain special needs and physical limitations. So she should research that and see if there's a studio near her that offers a class like that. But they do exist.
Sarah writes in a question for you, Stephanie. You mentioned yoga's role in your own recovery. Are there practitioners, especially in the East Bay, who work with addicts?
You know, I'm sure that there are. I work with addicts all the time. And, I mean, she's more than welcome to email me if she wants, and I can help connect her with somebody if she needs that.
Yeah, we actually offer a class, not at this conference, but at our Boston conference on yoga for recovery. It's actually becoming a more and more popular topic. I believe a lot of people have found yoga that I've seen when they were and they're recovering addicts.
Can you distill again, Stephanie, since from your own experience, about what is it? I mean, you read about various programs for people with addiction issues, 12-step, whatever. Can you describe what it is about yoga that is central to someone who is struggling with various addictive problems?
Well, that's a really, really big question. And I can only speak from my own experience, you know, of being addicted to drugs and alcohol. And for me, it was sort of like this hole, you know, that you're always trying to fill. And it's a way of self-medicating. And really what I needed to do, instead of grasping for everything outside of myself for happiness, is to look inside and just take time to be quiet and to witness my own divinity, literally, and witness my own beauty and actually take a moment to see how generous my life really is. And through that and other support, I was able to get clean, you know, and yoga not only helped completely take away my depression and anxiety, but it helped give me that moment of pause, which for an addict can be the difference between life and death oftentimes. So, you know, it just works. That's what I can tell you.
And to Annie, who joins us in West Hollywood on the Sirius Satellite Network. Annie, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I first want to say how blessed I feel that I've taken classes for years with James and how much he and all of the teachers that I've taken from have enhanced my life and how yoga really is a 4,000-year-old practice that's kind of the handbook for a person's life and body. And we take such good care of our homes and our cars and our pets and so often neglect our physical body, but more importantly, our mental health and our spiritual health. And instead of paying money for a therapist or for liposuction or some quick fix, yoga is a really wonderful holistic practice that can help everyone.
Annie, thanks. Thanks for the call. Well put. Nice way to observe it. And in some ways, it is just a last thought, because it's pledge time on public radio and we're going to be going away for a pledge break in a moment. But is yoga sort of the antithesis of the quick fix?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I would say so. I think, you know, people, this culture is very quick to grab medication for all that ails. And if you take time for your practice. I know personally for me that it's really I was suffering from severe headaches, and I was told to take medication, and I found that my yoga practice really helped much more than the medication that was prescribed to me, which had all kinds of side effects.
And I also think the quick fix, it's like it's going to keep coming back. It's going to keep coming back, but yoga is a way to alleviate it or deal with it permanently. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's like Stephanie was saying with addiction, we have a tendency to just keep turning to something that's filling this hole. But you can turn to yoga and it will deal with it all the way. Hmm.
Last email we want to read before we have to move on. This comes from Gunjan, who writes, "Growing up in India, it wasn't uncommon to see our moms doing yoga in the morning at home, sitting in front of TV. Of course, it was never something very attractive for us as younger people. We'd always rather just take an aerobics class. A couple of months ago, I spoke to my mom and told her I was thinking of joining a yoga class, and her reaction was, 'Oh, sure, now that all the Americans are doing it, you want to do it too.' It always seems like there are more people in California itself that are into yoga than the entire country of India. So it is an excellent form of exercise, and it makes me wonder how it can be just more than a passing fad. Thanks for that thought. Now that the Americans are doing it, and they're doing it, of course, at the Yoga Journal Conference, which takes place this weekend in San Francisco. For more information, go to yjevents.com. This is Pledge Week on KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Continuing our conversation now about yoga for our Sirius Satellite Network audience, let's go to Greg with a question. Greg, go ahead, please. Greg, you're on. Go ahead. Are you with us, Greg? Greg is off doing yoga, apparently. Anamika is with us. Anamika, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's a nice opportunity, an excellent topic, and very timely. My personal experience with yoga started when I was an adolescent, when I learned as a part of my school program. And then I took further classes and also became a yoga teacher. Now, personally for me, now I'm a parent of two adolescent children. What I found is it is an extremely essential part of everybody's life, with all kinds of conflicting, messages that we get, very high expectations from parents as well as for children. So it creates so many stresses in our lives. It really puts, our feet on the ground, and it's an enormous blessing, and I really feel very fortunate learning from India and now coming here and seeing that it's really being supported, and a lot of people are realizing. And the previous caller that mentioned that, as now since Americans have started doing it, but better late than never. and I hope more and more will people take it
Thanks.
On.
Thanks, Anamika.
I had a question.
Yeah, briefly, please.
Since, as we are calling it as a quick fix, I hope it will not be called as a quick fix. It definitely is a fix, and hopefully we'll be able to stand in front of the pharmaceutical industry and all kinds of interests,
Okay, Anamika, thanks. I'm gonna let you go so we can get in some other comments. But thanks for that observation. I think we were trying to say that it was kind of the opposite of a quick fix. But I'm curious about her reference to sort of having grown up in India. We had an emailer who also made that connection, and a number of our other callers. You spent some time studying in the East in Sri Lanka. Is that kind of how important is that, I guess, to sort of sustain that connection or to be reminded of the roots of where yoga originated from, James?
You're saying to actually go there and travel, or mm-hmm. or can you be a little more specific?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's important for people to gain an understanding, to make that sort of, at least if not literally, travel there, become more aware of that 4,000-year-old tradition.
Well, we all have. I mean, that's where it's all come from. That's where all the knowledge is passed down through the ages to us from these places. And whether it's Buddhism or Hinduism or, whether it's yoga, it's all come from these source places. And for me, I've benefited greatly by traveling there and being a part of it. And being an Indian culture, it's like it kind of is a dying art in India. I go every year, and it's less and less a part of their society, whereas You know, many of the young men are becoming engineers, and many of the women want to be Western in a way. So it's really becoming more of an art that the West is embracing. It's almost like the ideas of the East are coming West, and the ideas of the West are coming East.
Has that been something that you've wanted to do or have done, Stephanie, in terms of travel?
Yes, I have wanted to get to India. I have not been there. But I think that it's very, very important to uphold the traditional teachings of yoga. I mean, that's the whole point. And that's the nectar of it all, you know. And so the idea is it's transmitted from teacher to student and teacher to student and teacher to student, so that I have all the knowledge that my teacher and his teachers and their teachers and their teachers and their teachers have transmitted through.
And a last thought, Alana, in terms of the conference this weekend, the kinds of things that are still possible for people who want to be last-minute attendees.
There are a lot of things still possible. There's space available. You can go to our website at yjevents.com to check out the class offerings. We have evening classes tonight that are still available. They start at 6:30. We also have a trance dance and kirtan event tomorrow evening.
And those are briefly what? What? Trance dance?
Trance dance. Shiva Ray, who is one of the she's a very popular teacher here, leads the people through this sort of, I guess the best way to describe it, it's like it sort of becomes almost like a rave without the drugs. we also have a kirtan beforehand, which is a group chanting a call and response. And that happens. And it's just a big, big party, and everyone lets loose and has just a wonderful time. It's a great way to sort of end your Saturday at the conference.
And again, the conference continues through Monday at the Hyatt Regency Embarcadero. Alana Magal, who is the conference director for Yoga Journal, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thank you very much.
Stephanie Snyder, thanks too for being part of our program.
Thank you, Dave.
And James Higgins, thank you for being part of our program.
My pleasure, Dave.
Well.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Tina Lorberg, and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our interns are Jeremy Blackman, David Carini, Julia Jackson, Alexander Park, Mithya Srinivasan, and we also want to thank our departing interns, Matt Colley and Mariah Dickerson. Thanks to both of them for all their help over this past year. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.